Illinois Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Johnson, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Judge Carol A. Hooten presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The matter before us today is Jacqueline Ann Stevens versus Gordon Michael Stevens. The file number is A200848. Counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes for your oral argument. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And if you would prefer, let's refer to the minor child rather than by name throughout these proceedings. With that, the appellant may proceed at this time.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. First issue I will address is issue raised in respondent's brief, whether this matter is a special proceeding. And I think the key word on that is matters that have the indicia of a trial are not special proceedings. Special proceedings are matters that do not have the indicia of a trial. This matter involved a 5-day court trial. The rules of civil procedure were followed. The rules of evidence were filed. It certainly was a trial in all aspects in both name. It was called a court trial, and it certainly functioned as a trial. And the purpose of post-trial motions, including the one filed in this proceeding, is to address possible errors before appeals are filed, to maybe reduce the number of appeals filed, and to streamline the issues if an appeal is filed. So,
and in fact, didn't the judge make grant your motion relative to at least some of the findings and modifying those findings?
Oh, that's correct, Your Honor. The trial court did partially grant the motion and partly denied the motion. I think the motion was denied on most issues, but some of the relief requested was granted. That's correct, Your Honor. I only raise this issue because in the responsive memo, respondent is challenging the filing of this appeal off of the decision on the post-trial motion. That's the only reason I raise this issue, Your Honor. Thank you. And a key issue is that physical custody was litigated at the trial without notice. There were numerous motions filed by both parties in the months, years leading up to the trial. It's been a case with a lot of legal conflict, a very litigious case between these parties, numerous motions filed by both parties, some pro se, some with the benefit of counsel. And the trial court at the start of trial, outlined the issues, went over with counsel what issues would be on the table, what would be discussed.
Mr. Shaw, can I just ask you, you made a statement at the beginning there, well, at least of this segment of your comment, that the court litigated physical custody without notice. So are you agreeing that physical custody was indeed litigated?
Well, I think the physical custody was decided without notice, because there was no actual litigating of physical custody. It was decided without notice. There was a brief mention of physical custody by one witness, which appeared to confuse legal and physical custody, as the witness was discussing scheduling appointments, things of that nature that would go to legal custody. So physical custody was not on the agenda put out by the trial court at the beginning of the hearing, and certainly was not litigated. There was discussion about legal custody and various other issues, but physical custody was not litigated, and it was not on the list of issues to be considered before the trial as well.
Could I interrupt you there? Because I'm looking at the judge's order, and in finding 36, the judge says, referring to your client, presently he is requesting that the court order the parties to share joint legal and physical custody of Landon, or in the alternative that he be awarded sole legal and in custody of the minor child. Additionally, he requests the court adopt the parenting schedule 12 that he proposes. So, I mean, why is that finding clearly erroneous? I mean, first of all, you haven't specifically noted that finding before this court that you want to reverse that finding.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I would just refer to the transcript of what happened at the actual hearing, that there was virtually no discussion of physical custody. Legal custody was discussed. numerous other issues between the parties were discussed, but physical custody was just not discussed at the hearing. Now, there were motions before the hearing by both parties concerning physical and legal custody, but it was not on the agenda. It was not discussed at the actual trial.
But where in this record do you have anything that contradicts this statement of the judge as a finding of fact, by the way, that your client had requested as an alternative that he will be awarded sole legal and sole fiscal custody of the minor child? Doesn't that in fact indicate that your client was well aware that this was an issue?
I would say, Your Honor, that the transcript speaks for itself, and that that request was not made in the transcript at the actual hearing. Physical custody was not on the agenda, was not litigated. I would defer to the transcript in that regard, Your Honor.
Well, and that statement is preceded by, in sum, he testified to the following. So are you saying that's not in the transcript, that the judge got that wrong?
With all due respect, Your Honor, yes, that the transcript talked about legal custody, but did not, physical custody was not litigated. There was not testimony as to physical custody in the transcript. That's correct.
Mr. Shaw, can I follow up with that then of Judge Hooten's question? What specifically, since generally we would review a modification of custody, and I'm focusing on the physical custody since that seems to be perhaps the key claim that your client appears to be contesting in terms of the judge's decision, is what findings are missing, what evidence is missing that would make the findings and conclude the findings regarding physical custody clearly erroneous, or most importantly then the conclusion of abuse of discretion that respondent should receive sole physical custody. What's missing, in other words, that you believe would have been litigated that the court should have had before making an order of modification of physical custody?
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor, I believe that the court should have made findings that, you know, a modification was necessary, that the minor child would be endangered if physical custody remained in the status quo, you know, without being modified. I would say that though any findings to that effect were not supported by the evidence, and then the parties simply did not present evidence as to physical custody. They presented evidence as to legal custody, various other issues, but there just was not evidence in the record about physical custody, a need to change physical custody, Your Honor. So any findings in that regard were not supported by the evidence.
Would you agree, though, the court did make findings regarding the four factors of modification, including specifically endangerment, and went through the 17 best interest factors as it considered those, and in modifying joint physical and legal custody? What's inadequate about those findings as it relates to physical custody?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that the two things, that the findings were not supported by actual evidence presented at the trial. There wasn't evidence presented at the trial to support those findings. I would also say that the court found that the minor child was endangered because of the conflict between the parties, and that was also not supported by the evidence, that whatever conflict there was between the parties relating to their legal issues, the numerous filings, the extensive litigation, that did not endanger the minor child in any way. So that finding was also not supported by the evidence.
Now, are you referring, my question wasn't as good. Are you right now referring to the findings the court did make in terms of endangerment, change of circumstances, best interest related to legal custody? And it appeared to me the guardian litem, which the court gave significant, and I realize that's one of the issues that you've raised, credibility to her findings that the child was in between, the child was caught between the differences between the parents in terms of medication and extracurricular, perhaps tutoring, all those sorts of issues. What I'm getting at is and I understand you apparently are now commenting on those findings related to legal custody. Am I correct? Not physical custody.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I may have misinterpreted the court's question, so my apologies. But it seemed like the court used the same reasoning for changing physical custody as for changing legal custody. So our argument would be two-pronged, that A, that findings weren't supported by the evidence, and that B, with respect to physical custody, the issue simply wasn't litigated. The parties didn't present evidence as to physical custody There wasn't any record made as to physical custody or notice of the parties to justify a modification there, and that there was not an endangerment sufficient to modify either legal or physical custody.
You know, I just want to go to another finding of the court, and the court's very extensive order, and that was with reference to the respondent here, and it's on page 56 of the order, finding W, and it says she is also requesting sole physical custody of the minor child, because the minor child having two addresses can be confusing, and because respondent wants to change the minor child's address, or that apparently your client changed his address, so he received all of his mail. I mean, is that finding clearly erroneous?
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that the finding is not supported by the evidence, and it also concerned an issue of physical custody that the partner was simply not living in, that, you know, appellant did not have notice would be on the table at the 5-day trial.
And you did, your client did receive a copy of the guardian ad litem's report. Am I correct? Prior to trial?
No reason to dispute that, Your Honor. I would recognize that he did. No, the record indicates that he did.
All right. And the guardian ad litem certainly addressed the issue of custody.
The guardian ad litem did make some discussion of it, but I would defer to the trial court's outline of the issues at the beginning of the trial, which laid out for both parties what would be on the agenda over the what turned out to be a 5-day trial, and that would certainly take precedence over a guardian report submitted sometime prior to the trial.
Mr. Shaw, you've with respect to the first issue, you've cited the Hofer case. And that case asked the question whether the issue of custody was litigated by consent, according and basically applied Rule 15.02 of the Rules of Civil Procedure. So I take it you're asking us to apply that same analysis here, in which case it seems to me the question is whether there was implied consent to try the issue. Is that a fair way to phrase the issue?
It is, Your Honor. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Well, given all of these, you know, indications in the record that issue was being considered by the guardian ad litem and by the judge, without any contrary statements that it was not at issue, isn't it fair to assume that it was litigated with implied consent?
And again, Your Honor, respectfully, I would ask the court to look at the trial court's own outline of the issues in the first few minutes of the trial. And I think it's in the page 5, 6, 7 of the transcript, an outline of the issues. There were many motions filed by both parties, many reports. It's a voluminous file. But the trial court's own outline, here's what we're going to consider. That is what the parties would reasonably rely on, what the judge is actually saying, as opposed to what's been filed in the months leading up, and that during the trial, there was the only mention of physical custody was briefly, and a witness had appeared to confuse it with legal custody. So I would say that there was certainly not implied consent during the trial, at any point during the trial, that physical custody would actually be litigated.
Was there any objection raised by your client as to the use of the guardian ad litem's report, which specifically addressed physical custody, or with reference to the testimony that came in regarding the issue of physical custody?
Well, Your Honor, I would say there was virtually no testimony concerning physical custody. The one reference to it appeared to be a witness confusing it with legal custody that would not put anyone on notice that physical custody would be on the agenda. Certainly, you know, appellant did not agree with the guardian's report, and the appellant's counsel made that clear. I think in both argument and in cross-examination, it was clear that the appellant did not agree with the report.
But did the appellant ever object to the issue of physical custody being litigated?
He did not, Your Honor, because he had no idea it was being litigated. There was nothing in the actual trial transcript to indicate the issue was being litigated. So with no sign it was being litigated, there was nothing to object to.
Mr. Shaw, could I follow up on Judge Hooten's question? I think I cut you off at the very beginning when you referenced the judge's opening words, and you referenced it again to, in answer to Judge Johnson's questions. Now, I have the transcript in front of me of the judge's statement. What would you point me to with regard to his opening statement that you believe limited the issues to exclude physical custody?
Your Honor, I would say that her opening statement, the opening statements of the trial court, and it looked like a dialogue with counsel, kind of outlined the issues to be on the table, that, you know, legal custody was mentioned, the physical custody. I also referred to pages 21 through 25 of the transcript. Physical custody was simply not mentioned. Legal custody was, looking at pages 5 through 8 and then 21 through 25. Legal custody is there and physical custody is not there as an issue, Your Honor. I see my time's up, so thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. The respondent may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, just to check, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you. Unfortunately, this case is before this court because the appellant was not happy with the district court's opinion. Whether or not appellant can actually point to the record to show that the district court either abused its discretion in making findings that were unsupported by the evidence, or that the district court improperly applied the law, the appellant has not been able to, either today or in the previous briefs that the appellant has submitted, prove to the court that the district court has erred. In regards to the first issue that was raised in the appellant's reply brief, the question is sort of twofold, and perhaps there's some confusion on the distinction between appellant's motion for amended findings as well as appellant's motion for a new trial. The respondent's argument is that appellant did not have the legal authority to, when he did, as far as timeline, request the court or to appeal his motion for the denial of his new trial. We're not disputing that he has a right to appeal to this court to question the denial of his, or I should say the partial granting of his motion for amended findings. But did he have the ability to appeal to this court his motion for a new trial? And if he did, when did his timeline begin to run for him to do so? And the Husso case is pretty clear on this issue and says that these types of proceedings, those involve a modification of custody, are considered special proceedings as they relate to the Minnesota Rules of Appellate Procedure 103.03 subsection G. And that those special proceedings should be taken from the original order. In other words, appellant appealed to this court the denial of his motion for a new trial, when rather he...
May I just interrupt you? With regard to the review of the orders, would you agree that our court's special term order of June 15 resolved that issue? It said it is considered to be a review of both the original order and the order of amended findings. So would it be true to say there's nothing really for us to resolve with regard to that issue?
Sure. Yes, Your Honor, that is fine. I will move on to the next issue then. The next issue, and that's been talked about quite a bit this morning.
I'm just going to follow up before you do that. Sorry, sure. Ms. Ross. Thank you. Is it safe to say, accurate to say from the record, that neither party's motion sought physical custody? The court's Niece Peterson order addressed only legal custody. And so the first reference to physical custody was a checkbox on a district court's order appointing guardian ad litem, which I assume it's safe to say from a record standpoint doesn't satisfy any notice requirement to any party. And so the reference to physical custody, both by your client and the judge, really arose because the guardian ad litem in her report, which was submitted to the parties long before the evidentiary hearing, referenced a recommendation of joint physical custody. Is that a fair summary of the record leading up to the first day of trial?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. That is exactly the timeline that occurred. It seems reasonable that if a party did not believe the guardian ad litem should have completed an evaluation of physical custody, that there should have been some sort of objection at that point. And so certainly an order appointing a guardian ad litem is not a typical motion where a party would bring a motion to modify physical custody. But at what point does a party have an obligation to say, why is this guardian ad litem being appointed to review or make a recommendation regarding physical custody? And then after you receive the guardian ad litem's report, at some point, doesn't a party who believes that that issue should not be on the table raise that issue to say, we want to preclude the guardian ad litem from testifying regarding anything having to do with physical custody because that issue is not on the table? Can you wait until—
Let me ask you, Ms. Ross, then, assuming we agree with you or that at a minimum the issue was tried implicitly and properly before the court, my question then jumps to the decision of the court and whether the findings of fact were clearly erroneous and or an abuse of discretion with regard to physical custody. I assume, number one, you would agree that the definition, which it is different for physical custody. And what I want to read to you, kind of premising my question, I'm reviewing the court's reference to the best interest. This is when the court in its findings was considering ultimately both legal and physical custody, and best interest factor number 7, the willingness and ability of each party to provide ongoing care for the child to meet the child's ongoing developmental, emotional, spiritual, and cultural needs. The first sentence of the court's finding is both petitioner and respondent are willing and able to provide care. And I believe it was the previous, the actual number 1 best interest factor, child's physical, emotional, cultural, spiritual, other needs. The first sentence in the court's finding, both parties love and care for Landon wholeheartedly, and his physical, emotional, spiritual, and other needs are being met at each party's home. So my question for you is how, with that sort of finding, would not a finding nevertheless that there's been a change of a substantial change of circumstances, emotional or physical, I guess could be either endangerment, that would make a change of physical custody consistent with that finding?
The record is clear that both parties love the minor child and that both parties should have sufficient time with the child. But the reason why the district court found that sole physical custody should be awarded to respondent was based on the disagreements, longstanding disputes, conflict that was going on between the parties, and more specifically, how that was relating to the child.
But that's my question. Are not those findings related to legal custody as it's defined in the statute? What facts as physical custody, which has to do with the residence and day-to-day living, which that finding suggested the court, and in fact, the ultimate order, which is actually consistent with the party's original dissolution order, as I understand it from 2017, is 50-50 parenting time.
There was, and I don't have the full, I can't find the transcript number right now, but there was some discussion about how having a primary residence for the child was important because disputes over where medications were going to be mailed was an issue, or who was going to be listed as the emergency contact person for the child. And so should the primary, the parent who has the primary residence be listed? Should the medications be mailed there? And so that is how it, I see that there's sort of a blurring of the line between, is this fact related to legal custody or physical custody? And I think in this case that those findings overlap because of the nature of the dispute that has been going on between the parties. So I understand what you're saying.
Isn't it true, though, that the court, and you've seen that phrase, the parlance, primary residence, but the court didn't order primary residence. Am I correct? The court simply ordered sole physical custody to your client. So would we not simply look at the definition of physical custody as opposed to legal custody to determine whether there was sufficient evidence in the record to support that conclusion?
Yes, we would. We would. I think the findings have to be read as a whole to determine that, although the court may not have used the term, the child's primary residence shall be with respondent, as Your Honor just said, we would then look to the definition of when the judge says sole physical custody should be awarded to respondent. What the judge was saying is that the child's primary residence shall be with the respondent. And the appellant cannot point to any specific findings to say this is where the district court got it wrong. This is the finding that the district court determined was to be true or a fact, but is not true. And the appellant can't point to any part of the record to say these are the facts that the judge found that do not support the judge's overall ruling.
Well, maybe I'll pose the question just slightly different. If we were reviewing a denial of a hearing based on Anise Peterson, and we aren't at that stage, I realize, because you had an evidentiary hearing, what would be the evidence of significant physical and or emotional harm that affects physical custody as opposed to legal custody of the child? And now we could look in the record. In other words, where would you point us to that there has been endangerment of physical or emotional harm as it applies to physical custody only?
The conflict between the parties and how it relates to the child. That is why the district court judge determined that sole physical custody should be awarded to respondent.
I know you've said that a couple of times, but doesn't that just bring us back around to legal custody? But how do we pull out the conflict as it relates to legal custody and its effect on the child, and instead focus on the daily living, especially given the finding I just summarized and the fact the court allowed the child to spend 50% of the time in dad's home?
And I understand what Your Honor is saying is that, but I think in this case, those issues, legal custody and physical custody, are blurred and relate to each other because of the conflict. I understand that very much of this case and the judge's ruling as to sole legal custody relates back to the conflict between the parties and how that was affecting the minor child. In addition, I think that that also played out in the physical custody because the child was being put in the middle over things like where medication should be spent or sent. And that is why the judge found that sole physical custody should be awarded to one party. But I see the court's concern.
Wasn't the parenting time essentially 50-50? So it was the same parenting time schedule. The only thing that the sole custody designation did was change the address of the child or designate the address of the child.
That's correct. And sometimes which house is the child's primary residence is very important. And sometimes from a practical standpoint, it doesn't matter too much. Just as Your Honor just said, if you have 50-50 parenting time, does it really matter which parent has primary residence?
And Ms. you raise an interesting point. If we were to assume that the court implicitly litigated physical custody, does that mean necessarily, and is there any law to support that the court litigated primary residence?
I believe that they're one and the same. I don't have the definition of physical custody in front of me, but I believe either the definition or Minnesota statutes or the case law would say that is what physical custody is the primary residence of the child.
I'll just read you from the statute. Physical custody and residence means the routine daily care, control, and the residence of the child. That's from 518.003. So your belief is that nevertheless, primary residence is the same as physical custody, even though that word's not in the definition. And so hence it was litigated once implicitly physical custody was litigated.
based on the definition that you read, it sounds like the daily care of the child is what relates to physical custody, but that occurs within one's home. And so that is why I was focused on the primary residence, is because we're talking about the primary care for the child.
Well, if, I mean, just, I'm thinking out loud now, but if in fact your client has sole legal custody, doesn't that give her the right to designate the school and do the things that would be associated with the primary residence anyway?
Right, right. What school the child would reside or go to, which doctor the child would see. And so perhaps there's some correlation there between if respondent is awarded sole legal custody and lives in one community, then depending on where the school is, that would likely be in her same community.
And Ms. Shaw, just to ask one follow-up, when the appellant asked for joint physical custody to the court, essentially that was asking for no change. In other words, he already had joint physical custody. So another way he could have said it is, Your Honor, on physical custody, we ask you to keep it the same that it is. Would that be fair?
That's right. Because before the trial started, the parties already had joint physical custody. That's right. That's right. But it's and we've talked on this a little bit already, but at what point does a party have an obligation to raise an issue? And respondent's point is that appellant waited too long to now claim that he wasn't aware, that this was some sort of a surprise issue that came, that he wasn't aware was going to be litigated. It was discussed at trial. We have pointed to the testimony where it was discussed. Appellant had the ability to address it at trial during his own testimony, but he chose not to. And I see I'm out of time, so I will stop for the court.
Thank you. And the appellant will have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. And if I just wanted to kind of point the court towards the section of the transcript in the beginning where custody was discussed, I would refer to the bottom of page 5. It was actually a recitation by counsel for respondent while the court was conferring with counsel to get an outline for the upcoming trial. And quoting from the last sentence, so we've got a motion by Mr. Stevens for sole legal custody. Ms. Stevens then brought a motion for sole legal custody. Then there's reference to a telephone conference and a parenting time schedule, asking for a modification of the parenting time schedule based on Ms. Utz's recommendation. Then next paragraph, there was mention of a right of first refusal, then a summary. I think that's it for current motions. Then Mr. Decker, counsel for appellant at the time, there was some discussion and essentially agreed with the framework outlined by counsel for respondent. And then the court essentially repeated the agreement of the parties. And then at the bottom of page 7, there was reference to by counsel for respondent about, you know, the parenting time needs to be addressed regardless of how the court rules on legal custody. So it was clear that legal custody was on the table. Appellant did not have an opportunity to object to physical custody being on the table, as there's no way to know based on what's being discussed on the record that it in fact was. Legal custody, parenting time, right of first refusal, that's what was clearly outlined to be on the table. And there were certainly no facts presented or justifying a modification of physical custody.
Well,
Mr. Shaw,
because I'm looking at page 105 of the addendum, and that's the judge's order in response to your motions, where you did raise the objection to the issue of physical custody after you got the decision. And the judge said that your client testified that he wanted the court to order that joint legal and physical custody remain, and that your client and I assume his attorney submitted proposals with regard to findings involving physical custody. I mean, isn't this all, and I think I've already asked you, there was no objection. Doesn't these activities during the trial, during the course of the trial, indicate at least an implicit consent to that issue being litigated under the circumstances?
Thank you, Your Honor. And I would refer to the transcript in the transcript of the testimony of Mr. Stevens. You know, it was focused on legal custody, parenting time, right of first refusal, the issues on the table, that he was not testifying as to physical custody, modification of physical custody, because that issue was simply not on the table. So, I look at page 144, middle of the page, referring to Mr. Stevens' testimony that Ms. Stevens asking for sole legal custody, and then his response to that. And there isn't reference by Mr. Stevens in kind of the intro in his testimony about physical custody being an issue. It simply wasn't on the table, and legal custody and the issues that actually were subject to consideration were what Mr. Stevens was discussing in his testimony.
Well, how did the court abuse its discretion in this case, setting aside your contention that there was no implicit consent to this issue being litigated? Did the court abuse its discretion in finding that the respondent should have sole physical custody in addition to sole legal custody?
Certainly, Your Honor. I would say the court abused its discretion in both regards, that there was no evidence that a change in physical custody was called for, to say nothing of physical placement that wasn't mentioned anywhere here. There was no claim evidence that the minor child was in danger, was being harmed in any way by appellant, and there was certainly no evidence that a change in legal custody was called for as well. The minor child was doing well. The parties had legal conflict, but it was not spilling over and endangering the minor child. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a moment. Judge Slater, did you have another question?
Thank you. I just want to follow up with that, Mr. Shaw. When you say no evidence, and it leads into my question, I wanted you to respond to what Ms. Ross pointed out, is that the reason that the court could review the findings the court did make with regard to the best interest factors when summarizing physical and legal custody, and the same facts, the contention between the parties, which there appears to be a fair amount of it, which I assume is why your client originally brought a motion for sole legal custody. There seemed to be some acknowledgement that the two sides were not agreeing on medications, on tutoring, and those sorts of issues. And so the court happened to choose legal custody with mother versus dad. My question, though, is her point being is that the court found endangerment affected would be resolved, that same facts supporting endangerment would be resolved by a primary residence, though the court didn't use that phrase. Would that, do you disagree with that? And if so, why or how?
Oh, yes, Your Honor, I certainly would disagree with that. There's no evidence in the actual record, looking at the transcript, that the minor child was endangered by the conflict between the parties. The minor child was thriving, doing a Mandarin immersion program, was taking medication, was having his what issues he had addressed. The minor child was doing well in school, had a good relationship with appellant. That was all in the record, appeared to be undisputed. So there was conflict between the parties, and quite a bit of it legally, but it was being contained through the court process and did not seem to be spilling over and impacting the minor child. So finding that the minor child was endangered by conflict was not supported by the record, because there's no evidence in the record that the minor child was being endangered at all, was not thriving.
All right. Any further questions? Very good. Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement and issue an order within the statutory period of time. Thank you.